Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Medieval Podcast. And we are here back again on the podcast interview series with another wonderful guest to kick off 2023. So our guest today is a brilliant historian with best-selling books, four non-fiction history books, including Heroines of the Medieval World, Silk and the Sword, The Women of the Norman Conquest, Ladies of the Magna Carta, Women of Influence in the 13th Century England, Defenders of the Norman Crown, Rise and Fall of the Warren Earls. Is that pronounced correct?
Well, I just say Warren, but
Warren might Earls, be Warren. Sorry.
I don't know. Nobody's alive to tell us. So.
No, true, fair enough. And not only this, but our guest here is also a fellow of the Royal Historical Society, writes for History, the Interesting Bits, a fantastic blog, as well as pieces for All About History magazine, and to top all this, has even worked in television with Australians Who Do You Think You Are? So without further ado, I'd love to welcome Sharon Bennett Connolly.
Thank you.
Wonderful. So I guess really to understand these formidable list of achievements, where did it all begin? Where did your pursuit for history begin? What or who inspired you to follow this career, really?
I have absolutely loved history as long as I can remember. When I was looking at the questions, I thought about it and I remember when I was, I think I was about six in primary school. And it would have been what is now year two, I think. And we had some Victorian clothes from a local museum, including Queen Victoria's bloomers.
Oh, wow.
Apparently they were Queen Victoria's bloomers. I'm not so sure now. But we got to try them on, and I got to try on this gorgeous red maid's outfit. And, wow. You know, you're 6-year-old in a maid's outfit. Thinking about it, I don't think those clothes were actually adult clothes, because I was six. And
scaled down version.
I was in this maid's outfit, which was supposed to be for a 16-year-old. So, but I just loved that from that moment on. It was like, you know, it's all the clothes and that, especially in those days, it was the Victorian era I was interested in. And there was these gorgeous portraits of Queen Victoria with her children all dressed in nice lacy outfits and that. And I was a very girly girl at the time. So I think that's what got me into it. But then ever since, it's just, I'm just drawn to it. You know, if I look for a subject, even plain Trivial Pursuit, the subject I go for is the yellow for history.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant. There is something about, I ask that question to everyone that comes on, and there's something just, I don't know, about history where it always is very deeply ingrained from a very young age. And I find that amazing.
Well, I was given a book when I was about 9 for Christmas called The Kings and Queens of Great Britain.
Mm.
And it's still, you should see it. The cover's all tatty and everything.
Oh, wow.
But it's been used so often. It's been, you know, I used to go from Richard the First to Queen Victoria to Elizabeth, and just, it's just my favourite book. And I still get it out now and have a look through it. And it's like, I was 9.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Gosh. So going from then to I guess now being this author with all these, you know, brilliant books, what drew you to write about the topics that you write about, because they're all along very similar themes?
Three of the books are about women, and one is about a family. Now when I was a teenager, I really got into Bernard Cornwell. The Sharp books were just out, shows you how old I am, and I really loved the Peninsular Wars and all that kind of thing. I think you can see what's happening here. I've gone from Victoria to Georgian, and now I'm medieval. So every couple of decades, I go back a few hundred years. But I was into the wars and things, and I never thought that women actually did anything in history, you know. Thanks to the chroniclers, they've been more or less written out. So you don't actually think, unless you look, you don't know how interesting women were in history. And it was about 10 years ago, I actually started looking into women's history, thanks to Facebook, because there were all these groups about kings,
Yeah.
but none about the women. So I
Oh,
started a
wow.
group
Yeah.
called Medieval Queens and Heroines.
Oh.
And I just started writing profiles of famous queens, medieval queens and that. And then it just snowballed from there, really. I started a blog and I noticed that the best posts, the most read posts were about women,
Oh, wow.
which I thought was odd, really, because I'd always been interested in, the wars and
Yeah.
that. And but people are interested in women's history, and there hasn't been an awful lot out there until recent years.
Yeah.
So I suppose that's why the blog took off so well, because people wanted to know but didn't have anywhere to find this information.
Yeah.
So that's where it all sort of started, and it's just snowballed from there.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's something interesting because I just coming from uni and everything, and in that now this surfacing kind of stuff about topics about women and kind of their role, people like Adela of Blois and really formidable women. And so what is kind of what would you say is the kind of benefit of that, really reframing our historical perspective away from this kind of great man theory, kings, popes, whatever it may be, and realigning this with women?
Well, I think what it does is it actually gives you historical perspective. Because until you put the women back into the history, you're not getting the whole history. You're getting just men, and this is what the men did. And but men were advised by their wives and by and ordered to do things by queens. And unless you put the women back into the story, you don't have the whole history. And I think
No.
it's great at the minute. I found out this summer that my book, Silk and the Sword, has been recommended by the Historical Association to schools to teach
Wow.
the Norman Conquest from the women's point of view.
That's
And it's like, how
incredible.
awesome is
Gosh,
that? And I got these.
congratulations on that. That is
Thank you.
actually amazing.
Well,
Wow.
I got these. One teacher, she sent me the lesson plans that she'd done, and it was like, this is awesome. It's getting the kids to actually think about the women's role in something that has before now been purely male concept. The Norman Conquest, you don't hear about the women, even though there were some incredible women involved. So it's like, yeah, it's giving the whole, making it the whole story rather than just part of it,
Yeah, no, definitely. And that's something I've learned. I'm currently writing a book at the moment, and I've got to just finished about talking about the age of Justinian, kind of really early on in the medieval period. And we talk about, it's funny because it's called the Age of Justinian, but behind Justinian was Empress Theodora, who history has been really unkind to. They kind of brand her as this kind of prostitute who slept her way to the top. But actually, when you look at, she passed so many policies to help women to so that they can inherit property, so that they wouldn't be in kind of the same kind of spheres that she grew up in and all this kind of stuff. But history kind of really smudges that out, and we focus then predominantly on Justinian. But it is amazing that when you reframe that perspective and include the women, that you get like a real full picture.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So you kind of have, especially with such a vast topic as women and such an untouched one as well, where do you begin with your idea process? Where do you kind of go, okay, well, I want to talk about women and I want to talk about history, in the form of a book. Where do you begin with that?
Well, with Heroines of the Medieval World, it began with I'd written a number of profiles, women's profiles, on my blog. And I just thought I could actually put that into a book, do more women. And it's just getting an idea of how you can write about the women, like you say. And I just thought heroines is it's sort of not chronological. It's written in chapters of different types of women.
Oh,
So
wow.
one chapter's the medieval ideal.
Yeah.
Another chapter is warrior heroines. Joan of Arc's in there.
Yeah.
And it's just the idea of I think there's 12 chapters, and just looking at women in religion, women who are seen as pawns, those who ruled. And the whole idea was to show people that they were incredibly strong women in all, well, it was, I was going to say in all walks of life, but I think there's only one who isn't actually noble in there, because the other problem with medieval history is you don't get to hear about the peasants.
Exactly.
You can hear that there's a female peasant, but you're not going to know her name or anything about her life, so you can't really write about it, unfortunately. So I think the lowliest person in there is Joan of Arc or Julian of Norwich.
Oh, yes, just down the road from me.
Yeah, she was incredible. I like her. I'm not so keen on Marjorie Kemp. I don't think I could do with all the crying.
That's brilliant. But I mean, what challenges then? Because women in history have been tainted. I mean, say Joan of Arc and Julian of Norwich, rather. Kind of because of being in that kind of religious sphere and writing, and we have her writing and things that she's produced, I guess you could say it's a bit easier to kind of research her. But obviously, many women, especially I guess queens, stuff like that, there's kind of lack of sources, you could say. So how do you go about researching the women that you then talk about?
Well, there are sources. There's the chronicles, and there are charters, women as well as men issued charters, and some of the charters issued by men were with the consent of their wives. So, which helps you to work out where the wife was at the time. If she was consenting to this charter, she was obviously with the husband at the time. So you basically work it, you look at the chronicles, and if by any chance the women are mentioned, fabulous. If not, you sort of have to do it looking at where the men are and what the men are doing. Like
Interesting.
my current book, my book that's coming out in May is a biography of Nicola de la Haye, who was the castellan of Lincoln Castle during the reign of King John, and was defending the castle in 1217 when the French attacked. And luckily, she is mentioned in the chronicles, though not to a great extent. But her husband gets mentioned. William Marshall makes this great speech about rescuing such a noble woman and things like that. So you do find her in places. And then you've got King John sending her orders to collect hostages or free hostages, collect ransoms, to send money to him because he's in need of it. So you just have to, it's like a jigsaw, you put it all together and hope that you've read everything right and interpreted it right.
No, definitely. And I guess then, kind of going back to kind of a more general look at, especially with the heroines in history, I'm intrigued to know then how you say that it wasn't kind of a chronological book, but more so about different types of women. Was that kind of organic, or when you were researching the women, you kind of were like, oh wow, this woman is really, powerful, representing all these different things, and kind of growing from there?
Yeah, well, each chapter is chronological. Within the chapter is chronological, but it was just when I wrote Heroines, there was no book like it. Since then we've had Nina Ramirez's Femina. Kate Moss has done a book, Warrior Queens, Something Rebels. There's a few books out there now. When I did it, there was no book like it, and it's like I've got to work out how to do this. And it wasn't until I'd done the research that I thought, actually, there's scandals, so there's a scandalous heroines, there's mistresses, so medieval mistresses, the survivors. And it was just like, actually, if I put them into chapters like that, it's going to be different to anything anyone's read. It's going to be chronological, it's not going to just start with Ethelfled and go on to whoever I think Anne of Brittany. Or Anne de Beaujeu is the latest one, or Alice Chaucer, but it goes all through the medieval period. So it's like, I think some people have, I know some people have struggled with it because it isn't from what chronological in the full sense, but then I don't think the idea was to show all the different types of women, and I don't think it would have shown as clearly how many incredible women there were if it had been chronological.
No, definitely. No, I think that's fantastic as well. But I saw when I sent you the questions before and I saw your answers, there's one thing that really stood out that I thought was really interesting, and it's something that I kind of had when starting off my book, which is, especially if you're tackling a topic that hasn't been written about, and kind of you have this overwhelming, I don't know, about fear or something like that, about, gosh, bringing justice to it, am I the right person to do this? I mean, how do you overcome that beginning fear when you're sitting down with a book and going, almost like this imposter syndrome of
It is
like,
imposter syndrome. It's
yeah.
exactly that. It's like, what are you doing, Sharon? You're not a writer. You're not a historian. How, what makes you think you can do this when nobody else has done it? Or, but I have this, it's actually the Nike slogan that always gets me. They just do it. So I just actually have to say to myself, just write. And yeah, having done that, and it's funny because I think with the third book, Ladies of Magna Carta, I sat there going, what on earth are you doing? You can't write. And for good talking to us, Sharon, you've published two books already. You can write now, just get on with it. But I still have it. I'm doing it now. I've just started writing up Heroines of the Tudor World.
Oh,
And
wow.
I'm doing, it's the same thing. It's just sat there thinking, I don't know. Do I really know what I'm doing? And it's like, you've written enough books now to be able to. But I also think that I need that. I think that I have to still have that nervousness about writing and about making sure I do a good job and making sure it's readable. I think I don't want to get cocky and think I can just write anything and everybody will read it. That's not me. I want to make it interesting. So I do take my time and I do have to kick myself and say, come on, you can do this.
No, I totally get you. And it's something that I had where I self-published my first book, and then now I'm with pen and sword like yourself and writing an actual kind of fully fledged one. And you sign up and you're like, okay, I'll do, oh, I can do 90,000 words on this. And you say all these, you make all these promises. And then I remember sitting down on for chapter one and just like writing the whole thing and of the chapter and just thinking, what on earth am I actually doing? I can't do this. But
Totally
I
agree.
heard a really interesting thing that kind of put my mind at ease, which is why I bring it up, because it reminded me of Richard Osman, who said when he writes his book, I think he writes crime books, and he said, like, if you don't go through the whole book like hating it and like not believing in yourself and stuff like that, then it's going to be a very good book. So I'm holding him to that in that sense. And it's true that you can't get cocky in that sense.
Yeah. The thing is, then you get the book back to edit to go through it, and you're like, you start reading it and you're checking everything, and oh, that word's wrong, that word's wrong. And then with Heroines of the Medieval World, I think I got to the Warrior Heroines chapter, and I was just reading it and trying to edit it, and I suddenly realized I'd read the whole chapter without actually doing any editing because I actually enjoyed reading
Yes.
it.
Oh, that's good.
Actually, it
No,
couldn't be
that
that bad if I forgot.
No, exactly. I mean, do you in your kind of writing process, I mean, how do you because I always worry, I'm like, is it good? It's just that basic question. Is it something, is it readable? Is it something that someone will find interesting? Do you give chapters to other people to read when you're writing a book, or do you just kind of have that faith in yourself that you're like, no, if I enjoy writing it, then someone will enjoy reading it?
I don't give chapters to other people to read, but that's not because I have faith in myself. That's because I'm petrified of getting feedback to say, Sharon is rubbish. So the first person that tends to read mine is my editor. When I've written it, I send it in and wait for the feedback and just fingers crossed and hope that somebody comes back and says, oh, it's good, or yeah, that's readable, and doesn't come back and say, right, you need to change chapter 3, 4, 5, and 6, and it doesn't work. But it's not for faith in my abilities, it's more that I dread getting feedback.
Yeah, and I find that's especially when you put yourself out there as kind of, you know, doing things such as this and writing a book and doing talks, whatever it may be, is that obviously you do open up yourself to criticism. And
yes.
How do you, you know, with all the different things that you do, the different projects you have, how do you cope when you come across that potentially bad review? Because I've remember seeing one of mine on the book I published on Amazon, and someone put one, and I remember the whole day I was just fuming and walking around like, oh, I can't believe it, they don't know what they're talking about, all this stuff. How do you overcome that?
I do try and rationalize it. I had somebody say that Defenders of the Norman Crown was boring, and they put that as the headline, and every time I go to Amazon, of course, that's the first one I see because it's at the top, and it's like, oh, charming, thank you. But then I remember how everybody else I've spoken to, I said it was really good and they really enjoyed it. And I had a chap from Canada get in touch with me on Christmas Day 2021. He'd got it as a Christmas present that morning.
Oh wow.
And it was something like 11 o'clock in the morning here, so, and 6 o'clock there, and he'd been reading it for 3 hours already.
Wow. I mean, that is what a
compliment. And he messaged me on the Christmas Day and Boxing Day. He'd read it by the end of Boxing Day. Mm. He'd literally sat and read this book because it was his ancestors. So he was really into it and into the whole idea of the Warrens. And that he kept messaging me and saying, oh, and asking me questions while he was reading it. And it was like, that is what writing a book is about, to get that kind of feedback and have somebody say, I spent 6 hours reading it today, I've finished it now, it's awesome. And it's like, thank you. I need that.
No, exactly. No, that's incredible.
And all the good reviews like that cancel out. Luckily, I don't get many bad reviews.
Yeah, no, exactly.
The good reviews like that cancel it out, and I concentrate on those.
No, that's incredible. So with that in mind, with all of the kind of the praise and everything, what do you think most people want from a history book?
I think they want the facts. They want to know the truth.
Yeah.
I actually totally believe that, you know, history is a different country. They do things differently there.
Yeah.
It is. I think that's why I like it. I'm not into 20th century history because that's not a different country. I actually remember it. So
I
can't be doing with that. But the 13th century and the 14th century, they do things so totally different there.
Yeah.
It's like you're going into another world. And I think these days there's a lot of historical fiction adaptations on television. You know, like the stuff about the Wars of the Roses and the Tudors. Yeah. And people sit and watch it, and then they're like, that can't have really happened, can it? And go, and then they turn to the non-fiction history books to find out the truth.
Yeah.
Which is fabulous. And hopefully everybody watching Vikings Valhalla at the minute will go, I need to read Silk and the Sword, because they really do. Because what happens in Vikings Valhalla is so not true.
Well, that's, it's an interesting that you say that, because I asked you that question. What do you think of shows like, be it Game of Thrones, Vikings, all these different shows, and also historical fiction that kind of blurs the lines between real and fake?
Yeah, I think they are great stepping stones for people jumping off into history, and they do go and research the facts afterwards. One of my blog posts is about Elizabeth de Burgh, who was the wife of Robert the Bruce. And a couple of years ago, Outlaw King came out.
Ah, yes.
And on that day, I didn't realise at first But I looked at my blog post figures, and Elizabeth de Burgh's blog post was going through the sky. It had something like 27,000 views in one day.
Oh,
It was
wow.
like, wow. And I was there thinking, what's happening? And then I went on to Netflix, and of course, Outlaw King's there, and it's like, oh,
Yeah.
people have watched that. Read about the watched about women in cages and Robert the Bruce's wife and what really happened, and they want to know. And I think that's
Yeah.
the perfect example that, they go straight onto the internet and try and find out what really happened. I'm pretty sure another question on the on Google is, did Henry VIII really only have one sister? Because the Tudors have conflated his two sisters into one person. But they do want to know the truth about these stories because the fiction draws them in, and then they want the facts.
Yeah, no, definitely, 100%. And so I'd love to know more about kind of, I guess, you as an author. Firstly, a lot of I guess a lot of people I've asked have very differing opinions on this, which is quite interesting. Is being a full-time author viable, do you think? And is it something that, you know, when we think of like the great age of authors and whatnot, is that kind of over?
I think it probably is, in a way. I think being an author is changing an awful lot. There's definitely different scales nowadays. You've got the big bestsellers like Bernard Cornwell and J.K. Rowling who are earning a fortune. Most authors are just about scraping by. Some are doing it part-time after work, sort of thing, and it's not easy to get the money in these days. You can supplement it by doing talks and things, which I do and I really enjoy, and the selling books, but you can't just sit back now as an author, go to a publisher, say, here's my book, and expect them to sell it either. They don't. They have a lot of books going out, and they do not have time to concentrate on your book. In they send it to the newspapers, they send it to the magazines. If they get inquiries in, like you did with me, who can I talk to Sharon? Then they'll pass it on to the author. But most of the marketing and getting yourself known has to be done by you. And a lot of authors find that difficult because, I mean, we're naturally introverts, we're quite happy to sit in an office all day with nobody else around, read and write. The idea of talking to people, no, we don't do that. And I have to force myself when, if somebody asks me to do something, to do, like with the TV thing, actually, with Who Do You Think You Are? ABC got in touch with Anne Boleyn, my publishers, and asked for me and emailed me and said, would you be happy to do this? And I was like, don't think about it, Sharon. Just say yes. You can think about it on the day later on. Just think about how you're going to do it, but just say yes. And I actually do that an awful lot. I just agree to things. And then the morning that I'm doing it, I'm like, what on earth have you got yourself into?
Oh, no. Oh,
But
gosh.
once I've stood in front of an audience or a TV camera, God, that was nerve-wracking, I just get on with it, and I enjoy it. But I don't find it doesn't come naturally to me to do things like that. So I just have to push myself and force myself to do it, and it always works out okay, thankfully.
No, but it is an interesting point that you make. I mean, that's what kind of drew me to start doing the podcast and everything, because I was like, okay, I'm writing this book at the moment that, you know, will come out in, say, about 2, 3 years. In that time, I've almost got to try and build a brand as best I can. And so even though, I mean, since doing that, I've now got a lot of joy out of doing it, and I get to meet amazing people like yourself and have these amazing conversations. But it is that kind of pressure almost to really, like you say, put yourself out there, to kind of make a name for yourself, so that when it does release, it's like the marketing almost does, this book sells itself.
It's worth it, and it's definitely easier if you do it like that. I know of a lot of people who put the book out and then say, I need a website. And it's like, that's so the wrong way around. My blog, I started my blog about 3 years before Heroines was published. It was thanks to my blog I actually got the writing contract in the first place, I think. So, but a lot of people had heard of me and I'd already built up a following. And the early readers, you know, the people who I'm going to buy that as soon as it comes out, they've been reading my blog. They knew how I wrote already. They enjoyed what I was writing about. So it actually made that easier when it came to actually pushing the book. I already had people desperate to read it, and I already had a few friends. A couple of my friends had sneakily got in touch with Amberley to get review copies of the book so that they could write reviews for the day it came out.
Gosh, that's brilliant.
But it was things like that. Because they'd been reading my blog for a while, so and they were like, we can't wait to read it.
No, that's fantastic. And that must bring so much joy as well to know that you have like so many supporters in that sense.
It's fabulous. It's just it just blows me away. Somebody said to me at Christmas, she's got my books on Kindle, and I always post up before Christmas. Remember, if you're buying one of my books, for yourself or somebody else, get in touch and I'll send you a signed book plate to pop in the front, or get in touch and you can buy a signed book direct from me. And this lady said, I've got them on Kindle. How can I get a sign? You can't sign those, can you? And I said, no, I can't, but I can send you a Christmas card if you give me your address.
That's lovely.
Somebody else went, can I have a Christmas card?
Oh, brilliant.
And that's all anybody wanted, a Christmas card from me.
Oh, no. Gosh, brilliant. So, as an author, kind of sitting down and writing a book, do you have a particular style that you kind of go for? Are you the type of writer who kind of locks himself away on some kind of retreat, like in the film Love Actually? Was it Colin Firth when he goes away to France or whatever? Or are you just able to kind of get on with it and get through it?
I haven't got a choice. I've got a teenage son, so I can't lock myself away for a week and just, although when I'm getting to the end of the book, it's like, right, leave me alone for 3 hours, let me just get on with it, and then I'll talk to you. But no, usually, I mean, my writing day sorts itself out. He's at school. He's actually just about to, he's doing his A levels. So he's out of the house at 7:30 in the morning. I have a read for an hour and then I get to work, and I work until he comes in at 4:30. So, and stop for lunch for an hour. I always make sure I stop for lunch for an hour.
Do you
Just have a break from the screen, from writing, and from thinking.
Do you set yourself targets? Because I've seen,
I do.
oh, really, like a word count target.
Yes,
Ah, interesting.
I have two targets. I have a daily and a weekly. So my daily target is 2,500 words. I don't always reach it, but as long as I reach my weekly target of 10,000 words, then I'm happy. So, which means technically I should be able to write a book in 10 weeks. I also cheat in that I include the bibliography and the footnotes or endnotes or whatever until I've got to a certain amount of wordage and I know I'm actually going to have enough words to write to be in a book. And then I'll have to delete the bibliography count so that I'm not going over my word count.
Oh wow, that's interesting, because I've heard such a diverse kind of a range of opinions. I personally I don't set myself a word limit. I have like a kind of one chapter per month is kind of my aim because I have a job on the side and everything. And that seems to work quite well, but I don't know, I feel like I would be so stressed out if I set myself a word count of whatever it may be.
You have to remember the way I do it. I research for 9 months and then I
Yeah.
just write the book. I know a lot of people, and Rona, my editor, has told me that the way to do it is to research a chapter, write a chapter,
Yeah.
research a chapter, write a chapter. I can't do that
No.
because most of the time I don't actually know how the book is going to be formed until I've done all the research. Like with Silk and the Sword, I actually was walking downstairs one morning. I'd done loads and loads of research, and I suddenly had a light bulb moment of how I was going to arrange the chapters. And
Yeah.
that it wasn't until that moment that I could actually write the book
Oh,
because I didn't
interesting.
know what I was doing.
Yeah. But then, do you find then when writing it that that then process changes? That then,
No.
no. So as soon as you've kind of reached that, you've then
Yeah,
got it,
I
and then you
can't.
write.
I just Yeah, it's only I can't write it until I know exactly how
Yeah.
these chapters are going to work. So it's just the way I do it. But it does mean that I don't. It doesn't change after that. I know exactly where I'm going, and I can just sit down and write.
Gosh,
And
wow.
all
I
the
mean, that's
research is
fantastic.
done, supposedly. Although I do find out, I've still got three books open on my desk with
Yeah.
research bits because I haven't worked out what happened after that or whatever. There's always bits I didn't think I needed to include that it turns out I did need to include.
Oh, no. Gosh. So, kind of just kind of to leave off, what would you, two questions really, what would your advice be to someone who wants to write a book? And kind of to answer the impossible question, what do you think makes a bestseller?
Right. Advice to somebody wanting to write a book is go ahead and do it. But don't do it for anyone else but yourself. You've got to do it for yourself. And if you're writing non-fiction, build your index as you go. Because you are the one who will have to do your index. And your publisher will only tell you this when you're editing it. It is in the contracts. It's always in the contract, but there's so much in the contracts that you miss it. With my first book, with Heroines of the Medieval World, I thought the publisher did the index. So I got to the edits and they said, "Oh, and don't forget you need to do the index." And I was like, "What? How do
Oh my gosh.
I do an index?" So then you're Googling, "How do I do an index?" So with the second book, it was like, "Oh, if I write down everything that's going in the index now, then when I get to actually have to find the page numbers of the index, I've got the people, got everything I want in there. I just have to find them on the page."
Got you.
So that's whenever I have a friend who's starting writing nonfiction for the first time, my first piece of advice is write your index at the same time as you're writing the book because it's
That's
so much
good to
easier.
know. I'll take note of that as well.
When you come to it, then when you come to edit it, when you come to Sharon, you need to do your index. You've got it. All you've got to do is find the page numbers once they've done the PDF. You can't do the page numbers while you're writing it because the pages change all the time. And it's only when it's been typeset by the publisher that they've got the actual page numbers. And you can do it. But if you've got the people and the places down as you do it, it's so much easier. It also helps, especially with medieval writing, to keep the names spelt the same way throughout.
Yes.
Which sounds daft, but when you're writing different people's names, like Isabel, you can write, there's so many ways to spell it. It's Isabel. With double LE on the end, Isabella. If you've got them in the index already, the way you want them spelled, then when it comes to writing, when you've not written about them for about 2 weeks and you go back to writing about them, it's like, oh, how did I spell it again? Oh, I know it's in the index. I can work.
Oh, brilliant.
much easier.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, index is so important. Just get that index done as you go.
And then
And
how do you construct a bestseller?
I don't know. I think a lot of that is just luck and finding something interesting, something that people are interested in. And you can, I'm sure, I mean, Bernard Cornwell, every single one of us is going to be a bestseller because he's Bernard Cornwell. But with the rest of us, it's like you just hope that because it's a subject you're interested in and you're writing with passion, it's got to be when you spend a year with one topic, you've got to be interested in it, you've got to enjoy it yourself, and then you can write passionately about it. And so long as you write with passion and it's interesting to you, it should hopefully be interesting to other people as well. Fingers crossed.
Yes, hopefully.
I've got a book coming out in May, hopefully.
Yes, no. Well, on that note, well, thank you ever so much for having a chat tonight. It was absolutely brilliant and wonderful.
My pleasure.
With that in mind, do you have any upcoming projects like your book, for instance, that you would like to kind of have a shout out or anything, or any projects that you've got?
Well, I do. I've started doing a podcast as well.
Oh,
I think we're
brilliant.
about six episodes in now, called A Slice of Medieval with Derek Burks. And the idea of that is he's a historical fiction writer. So we talk about the fiction and the actual history,
Oh,
which
wow.
is quite interesting.
Gosh.
I've got a book coming out in May called King John's Right Hand Lady, the story of Nicola de la Haye, which is Nicola's amazing. She defended Lincoln Castle against all comers, basically. She was so impressive. And in the last one, she was in her 60s
Wow.
and rescued by William Marshall, who was in his 70s.
Oh, wow.
I think if she'd been in her 20s and he'd been in his 30s, that would have been a film years ago. It's perfect, perfect material for a film, except there's these two old OAPs saving the
Yeah. Gosh.
But yeah, that's been really fun to write, and I can't wait for people to read it. I'm also
Oh,
nervous
brilliant.
for people to read it because I'm just hoping it goes down okay.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it'll be more than great. No, it sounds brilliant. Thank you ever so much once again. And there we go. So, thank you very much for watching, and be sure to look at our previous podcast with all the wide range of authors, historians, archaeologists that we have had, and look forward to the future ones. Thank you very much. There
Thank
we go.
you.